on today's Compassion Radio.
So when I grew up, and you may have experienced this, our church is taught that maybe you should withdraw from society. You wouldn't go to movies. You wouldn't do anything like that. That is unrealistic. I do recommend staying in touch with people who are in a different world. The poverty rate in Gaza before the war even happened was about 2/3. And now that's like 95 to 100%. Very lucky to get the next meal or the next drink of water. How can we not be concerned, Bram, about that kind of situation? And now it's being foisted on South Lebanon, whether that war is deserved or not. The people are suffering on both sides of the border.
Hi, and thanks for joining us today on radio's Stories from the Frontlines of Faith broadcast, Compassion Radio. They say you can't make old friends, but it sure is nice to grow old together with people you admire and respect. Not that I'm in any rush to do so, of course. Today we check in with a real lion of the faith and someone who has consistently challenged our listeners for dozens of years to take seriously our responsibility and commitment to the worldwide body of God's kingdom. As a result, we've received some of the most important advice and experience imaginable. Today's no exception. Thanks for tuning our way today. Well, friends, there's a lot going on in the world right now, as you well know. The earth itself seems to be fighting us and wanting us to leave or something, but I don't believe that there's no hope for the end of 2024. I believe, in fact, that God has some great things in store for us, and some of the people that help me believe that are the ones that go to the toughest places and bring back stories of God's amazing work. We've visited with this particular guest a number of times over the past few years. We've traveled together. And friends, I want to reintroduce you to our dear friend, Dr. James Jennings of Conscience International. Jim, welcome back to Compassion Radio.
Bram, it's great to be here with you.
We've talked about a lot of big topics over the years and the whys behind the whats. But we got to get back to some new whats. You and I have not even had a chance to sit down and talk since the beginning of the war in Gaza, where you have a lot of relationships that were under threat at the time. But I want to do a quick survey of the world, because you still have active projects that are involved in at least four continents. Tell me the hottest things going on right now for you as Conscience International, as a relief agency, and as an intermediary in conflicts like you do so many times.
I think the one that it seems most relevant to me, and you would know a lot about this because I think your family was involved in the Democratic Republic of Congo for many years in missions, and that country has changed, called itself Zaire, and then later Democratic Republic of Congo, DRC. And we have a project right now in Goma, which is near Lake Kivu, on the border of Rwanda. You were there with me about 4 years ago, I believe, when we went to that place. And the testimony from the people who had suffered the guerrilla wars, the genocide in Rwanda, the guerrilla wars in Congo, and all of the suffering that goes with that kind of thing, told us a devastating fact that 1/3 of the women in eastern Congo have been raped. Yeah. And the guerrilla wars are still going on. There have been hundreds of thousands of people killed and starved in the wars in about 35 years now. And it's seldom ever covered in the Western media, as if it's on the moon or someplace we don't know anything about. But it's right here on this earth. And that has been distressing. But the answer to your question is, we have a new project in which we are training emergency medicine physicians.
So it's been difficult, to say the least, in Goma. And yes, it seems like it's the far side of the moon. Just you and I having to drive across the mountains of Central Africa, across Rwanda to get there was an adventure in itself. So what's happening right now in Goma?
Right now, we have a program in which we are training emergency medical physicians, the Heal Africa Hospital in Goma. In a country of 80 million people with two guerrilla wars going on, there a huge refugee movement of peoples. There are no trained emergency medicine doctors, so they just have to take their chance. that they might survive if they're wounded in an automobile accident or in the war.
So how will you deploy the people that you're helping with? Will they actually be sent out from Goma to go join groups that are fighting on the front lines and being like medics in the war, or just being like village doctors that are trying to help bring healthcare back to the population?
It's very interesting that you ask it that way. The way we're doing it, we had a leading medical practitioner from this country who happens to be our medical director, Dr. Gail Anderson, and he has made two trips there and is making a third one this fall. And he has worked with a team of surgeons from Minneapolis and Milwaukee, and they have done things in that Heal Africa hospital that you wouldn't believe. So the program is based there, but we're bringing physicians who already are doctors, but they want to take a specialty in emergency treatment, and they are coming from three other cities in Democratic Republic of Congo to go to there for 3 months of training. Then they go back and do their field work, and then they come back again. So we have the head of that program goes out to check them in the field to see how they're handling their responsibilities. So it's a really good program.
So it's like medical school being sent out there in the middle of a war zone to get your practicum done. What do you consider success in a program like that?
I think it would be to train the trainers. In other words, if you have a big country with a large need, if you have, I think each class holds about 12 of these doctors that come for 3 months and then go back and come again. So it takes 2.5 years for them to finish that program and get the advanced degree or recognition that they need. Success in the program is that they replicate that in their own city or their own hospital. As you know, in Congo, there are not many roads. There are a lot of rivers, and travel is by river, some dirt roads and trails, and then air travel. So it's a huge country, very difficult to operate in, and the need is unimaginably great. With 9.7 million internally displaced people, the biggest refugee problem in the world, neglected by our media, naturally, of course, the way things are in this country in terms of what's important or what to shine the light of information on. But even the Sudan war, which is horrific, you and I worked in Sudan a long time over the years, and in South Sudan as well. But in Sudan, there are something like 6.3 million refugees from that war, some of them over into Chad on the western border of Darfur. But it all sprang out of the Darfur horrendous situation, which many people called genocide. I certainly believe it was genocidal, at the very least. And those people have fled into Chad now, and we need help reaching those refugees in Chad.
Well, I was following along with some of the statistics out of the CIA and the UN concerning disease spreads and tropical diseases. It seemed like over the past 20 years especially, anytime there was a major outbreak of something that was not expected, like you have Ebola pop up somewhere, or now in the past 2 months it's been Marburg virus, which is similar to Ebola, that the very presence of a epidemic or an outbreak was usually indicative of some kind of conflict, that people were suddenly being forced to move, leave, run to the jungle, and then were either eating things they wouldn't normally be able to eat or want to eat, or forced into contact with other kinds of animals or even mosquitoes and things that give them diseases they would not normally have gotten because they're outside their element of safety, their safety zone. So that's happening right now in Burundi, I understand, just north of Rwanda, that there's a major outbreak right now of Marburg virus, which has got them very, very concerned because of how long incubation is. They could travel across the world a number of times before even it's registering as present. So we wonder sometimes whether or not these stories have any effect or importance to us or should. It is absolutely in our national interest, in our Western world interest, to be on top of where these kind of outbreaks happen and understand the causes of them, because those diseases are coming for whoever's in the way. So if we want to avoid another COVID worldwide pandemic, we better start paying attention to where conflicts are happening in hot zones and at least giving a minimum of resources to protect our own future, if nothing else, if we're only going to be selfish about this. So I'm going to ask you, Jim, to make the case. Why should we care about the kind of conflicts that are happening in the world zones that you travel to all the time?
Well, the most obvious example is the COVID outbreak, which became a worldwide pandemic. And there's nothing that scares public health experts more than when you say pandemic, because it becomes global. And it became global very quickly because people travel all over the world now. And also there is the mpox or monkeypox in Africa now. All these kinds of things spread throughout the world fairly rapidly. So it's in your own backyard very soon if it happens in another place. But that's only part of it. The other part is the violence that often attends those kinds of things. And then the economic impact, which takes money out of everybody's pocketbook on Earth if it's not attended to. If it expands into a huge problem, I have no idea how much the COVID pandemic cost the world, but it would be incalculable. It damaged everybody's well-being in the whole world.
It did. So it makes sense at least to be aware of it and to care about it, but then you have to ask the question next, what do you do? What is the most effective things you found in the past 50 years of your involvement with world crises? What are the most effective things we can do anytime a conflict like what's happening in Congo right now, or in Beirut, Lebanon, or across the Middle East through Syria and Gaza, and the conflict between Israel and Iran? What can we do now to make sure that it will pay rich dividends to us 5, 10, or 20 years down the road from now?
You know, when we have taken teams to respond quickly to earthquakes, natural disasters, refugee flows, wars, you have to start with the most basic things. Water is life. And if people don't have clean water and they don't have it within 3 days, some bad things will start to happen. And people die very quickly, children especially, if they have infectious diarrhea, which is one of the curses in this world. And then there are many other things, malaria being one of them. So you want to take water and food. Food is usually available. It can be obtained, but it's not available if people can't afford it or reach it if there's violence in the way. So to try to break through those initial barriers, if you go around a refugee camp and ask every tent, the family, what they need most, they will usually say shelter, because we're here on the floor with the insects and bugs and spiders, and it's very uncomfortable. You and I both remember the Syrian refugee crisis in Greece, and 105 degrees sitting under a tarp with a family, everybody weeping because of the suffering and no way to get out of it because the heat is there and there's no shelter really. And so you experienced that, Bram. And so what I say is that you have to get there the first with the most that you can, and then you have to call attention of other people in the world who can have resources by their side under their right hand if they will take the trouble to share it with somebody else.
Compassion Radio will continue to keep bringing you encouragement from the Word, inspiring stories from the front lines of faith, and awesome opportunities to make a difference for the kingdom around the world. But we need your help right now to continue doing just that. Please take a moment today to consider how you might help us to accomplish our unique media ministry and mission. Remember, friends, Compassion Radio is always a coalition of the willing. Are you willing to help get out God's good news stories of the kingdom really living the gospel in the 21st century? Oh, I hope so. Thank you, friends, for standing with Compassion Radio during these times of great change to our normal life. Of course, there's nothing normal about our situation, but there's also nothing normal about the kind of faith and power we find in Jesus. Just visit our website, CompassionRadio.com, or call our toll-free order line, 1-800-868-2478. And note our new mailing address, which is P.O. Box 77160, Corona, California, 92877. Again, that's Box 77160, Corona, California, 92877. And now, back to the broadcast.
The heat is there, and there's no shelter, really. You experienced that, Bram. And so what I say is that you have to get there the first with the most that you can, and then you have to call attention of other people in the world who can have resources by their side under their right hand if they will take the trouble to share it with somebody else.
It seems like on social media across the U.S., especially because our national election, and in deep ways as a nation, we are very weary of this constant battle between what seems to be the MAGA world and the liberal world, as if they are uniform in their own identities or not. People find themselves floating back and forth on certain ideas between the two all the time. And yet there seems to be this kind of ossification. Things have just gone petrified, one side or the other, in everyone's perception. But it seems like in the evangelical world especially, which is where you and I come out of, that there seems to be kind of a tacit acceptance that the only way forward is to just wipe the slate clean and push everybody out we don't want and just rest, and then we'll get back to paying attention to life after we've solved our own problems right here. To the point of saying, literally, we are not wanting another dime to be sent overseas to help another country or to fight another war. It's all about us now. I find that theologically troubling because Jesus was quite the opposite about seeing a need in front of you and attending to it rather than discarding it out of hand. But beyond the philosophical problem of that, I do want to ask you, Jim, how do we find a way to be obedient to the Word of God and to the example and the words of Jesus and still attend to our own issues? Is it possible for us to be generous in spirit and in truth, and in reality, and in our own finances, and still find a way to attend to our own hurts and our own wounds? Can it be done?
It's a difficult question. I refuse to believe that it cannot be done, but you almost have to go back 200 years when our country was first being settled, and some people with religious convictions insisted that they wanted to remain true to the gospel and they wouldn't go along with the worship of money. Uh-huh. The Quakers, some of the Amish, and other groups of people that withdrew from society. So when I grew up, and you may have experienced this when you grew up, our churches taught that maybe you should withdraw from society and be, you know, totally away from that point of view. So you wouldn't go to movies, you wouldn't do anything like that. That is unrealistic. And so I don't have an answer for living in this society and neglecting the rules or the common topics of this society. I do recommend staying in touch with people who are in a different world and have different needs and values. And the poverty rate in Gaza before the war even happened was about 2/3 of people below the poverty level for that territory. And now that's like 95 to 100% of the people are living in abject poverty, very lucky to get the next meal or the next drink of water. And how can we not be concerned, Bram, about that kind of situation? And now it's being foisted on South Lebanon, whether that war is deserved or not. The people are suffering on both sides of the border. So I think that we have to take a long look at where American society has come to. One place to start is to look at the overconsumption or the obvious worship of wealth and see if that is meaningful, and especially in light of the Gospels, or not. And it doesn't take much to find the teaching about that that Christ gave in the Gospels. It's very clear that we're off track in terms of the Christian faith if we go along with what is celebrated as the USA.
I know years ago I read some of Tom Friedman's books about politics and economics over generations and centuries, and how we have come such a long way as a world from abject poverty affecting a lower and lower percentage of humanity over all these years, and yet the problem persists. But it is, in fact, trending toward dispersing of wealth and building the bottom up, literally, in countries around the world, even though we have a hard time seeing it from our perspective in America. And so that's to be praised, that we actually are seeing progress. But the idea of a family who's earning $2 a day making it all the way to $20 a day, we look at that and say, that's just a pocket change issue. I mean, maybe not buy a couple extra coffees, but that's not an insurmountable idea for going from $2 to $20 a day in our minds. But when you're living on $2 a day or less, going to $20 a day is a 1,000% increase in your means. And that seems like almost impossible. Yet those of us who are on the wealthy side of things, if we could find a way to invest in the people that are actually building the things that will last and avoid wars and all the dissipation of wealth that goes into destruction and war, we can see that bottom come up 1,000% to the point where the poorest among us are at least able to feed their family a square meal every day. It is possible. That seems to me the kind of hope and ambition that Jesus seems to be talking about every time he talks about the poor among us and how he's with them. Not to help them suffer through being poor, but to see a way forward and out of it, and help the rich to see the potential of being friends with those who don't have as much as you, and actually learn to love. That seems to be where the heart of the gospel really is, and you've been living that out the past 30 or 40, maybe even 50 years in the work that you've done, Jim. You've helped bring the hope of believing that the word that Jesus spoke is possible in our generation, because you've gone there to show how it can. And you've made opportunities for people to give and to be part of projects that have, in fact, transformed the lives of millions of people where they are by something as simple as bringing up the very bottom from $2 a day to maybe $5 by giving them something to do as meaningful work and the means to do it. So I do still believe that it's not just a possibility, but it's going to happen because God has called us to do it and he doesn't set us up to fail. So in our generation, you and I being toward the older end of it, we may not see the fruit of all that in one generation, but I do believe if our kids keep believing with us, that we keep going toward the goal, gently but persistently, day after day, and not giving up simply because we can't see the end of the giving, that we don't give up on the reality that this is eternal business we're doing here, and that God is in it, and he's in it for eternity, in you and in me and in our kids and in the world to come.
My thanks to Dr. Jim Jennings of Conscious International. He'll join me again next week to wrap up this conversation. In the meantime, remember that your gifts to Compassion Radio are helping projects like the things that Jim is doing right now in countries like Lebanon, Israel, Gaza, Congo, and many other parts of the world that are facing great crisis and challenge.
I hear the sweetest sound, the sound of hope to come. Together we could bring goodwill to everyone. Let it start with you, let it start with me. Let every nation rise and sing this melody.
Give online today or call us at 1-800-868-2478. And P.O. Box 77160, Corona, California, 92877. We need you, friend, so contact us today.